Your film is now ready to be shown.
Good morning. I'm Justin Hendricks, editor of Tech Policy Press, a nonprofit media venture intended to provoke new ideas, debate, and discussion at the intersection of technology and democracy. At Tech Policy Press, we've been tracking the emerging application of generative AI systems in content moderation. Recently, the European Center for Not-for-Profit Law, or ECNL, released a comprehensive report titled Algorithmic Gatekeepers: The Human Rights Impacts of LLM Content Moderation, which looks at the opportunities and challenges of using generative AI and content moderation systems at scale. I had a chance to speak to its primary author.
I'm Marlena Wozniak, the senior legal manager at the European Center for Nonprofit Law, based in San Francisco.
Marlena, can you tell us a little bit about what the center does?
The center, ECNL, as we call it, is a human rights and civil liberties organization. For over 20 years, we've been mostly focusing on civic space, making sure that civil society organizations, but also grassroots orgs, activists, have a safe space to organize and do their work. We're mostly lawyers, but I often say we're the fun lawyers. So we also do advocacy, research, and basically anything that we can do to protect and promote an enabling civic space. My team was founded in 2020, I believe, and has from the beginning focused mostly on AI, but it's more broadly the digital team at ECNL. So we look at how technologies, specifically emerging technologies, impact civic space and human rights. So our core human rights or civil liberties that we look at is typically privacy, freedom of expression, freedom of assembly, so rights to protest, for example, association, right to organize, and non-discrimination. And our key areas of focus substantively are typically surveillance, AI-driven surveillance, like biometric surveillance, and broader, and social media platforms that play such a big role in civic space today. And that's in a nutshell my team and how it fits within the broader org.
Well, I'm excited to talk to you about this report that you have authored with help from a variety of different corners, but it's called Algorithmic Gatekeepers, the Human Rights Impacts of LLM Content Moderation. So this is a topic that we've been trying to follow at Tech Policy Press fairly closely, because I feel like it is the sort of intersection of a lot of things that we care about around, social media, content moderation, online safety, free expression, and then, of course, artificial intelligence and LLMs, generative AI generally. The kind of intersection of these two things, I think, is probably one of the most interesting and possibly undercovered or underexplored, at least to date, issues at the intersection of tech and democracy. So I want to just start by asking you how you did this report. It's quite a significant document. A lot of research obviously went into this, including gathering some new information, not just kind of combining citations, as many people do when they produce a PDF white paper. What got you started on this and how did you go about it?
Yes, you're right. It was really a heavy lift. It was a research project that went on for about a year. And we collaborated with great folks, including yourself. I remember, I think last year we had a call to hear your thoughts. And shout out, before I go deep into contact, to Isabel Anzabi, who was our fellow last summer and really helped me just like go through a lot of papers, mostly in computer science. And their media network, who provided generous support for this project. And so how it started, I accidentally fell into AI in 2016, but come from content moderation in the 2010s, 11, 12. So like I'd say early days of content moderation. So automated content moderation has always been a big focus of mine. I was also at Twitter at some point, overseeing their legal department, or sorry, content governance and legal department. And living in San Francisco right now, really the big talk on the street is always LLMs and Gen AI more broadly. And so I started hearing like various use cases of LLMs for content moderation. Most of the talk, I will say, and focus of the research and civil society community is how to moderate LLM-generated content. So how to moderate ChatGPT, for example, or Claude. That is, of course, super important. And I wanted to look at it from another angle, which is how are LLMs used for content moderation? And this, I will say, Justin, has been a little bit of a like chicken and egg conversation or reflection, because the way how LLMs can moderate content also impacts how LLM-driven content will be moderated, and how they're moderated impacts how they moderate content. So it's hard to separate those like one from another, but I did choose to have that focus. And it's interesting because it's very much a nerdy topic and yet has real world implications and is very hyped up. So one of the things that I always love to do is go beyond the hype. I'm not a hype person. In fact, now I hate AI. It was fun working on AI in the 2016, 17, 18 years when nobody really cared about AI. Since ChatGPT was released, the only thing people ever want to talk about is AI. So now I want to scream. But all this to say that I did want to impact some of the real implications and parse what are promises and what are, you know, really not even realistic promises, but the types of impacts we want to see, because I do believe that, you know, it can be helpful. And also, as this is an emerging space, prevent any possible harm. And I think folks listening to this podcast probably know that human moderation is extremely complicated. It's horrible for workers. It doesn't always an understatement, produce good outcomes. And so machine learning came as a solution to that. It was expanded during COVID and sort of came as this silver bullet solution. There has been increasing research showing the limitations of that. And so now LLM is the new white horse, is that an expression? Is the savior. And there's a lot of hype. So that's where I came from. It's like, okay, let's go deeper into this. Let's review a lot of computer science papers where some of this more rigorous qualitative and quantitative work has done, translated to policy folks, and bring a human rights approach, because that's my background. I'm an international human rights lawyer.
So readers of Tech Policy Press have at least had multiple pieces that we've posted on the site about this issue. And often there's been this sort of question about what is the promise potentially to offset the dangers to the labor force that currently engage in content moderation on behalf of platforms. But then also, of course, there are various perils that we can imagine as well. And we're going to get into those a little bit. But I think one thing that distinguishes your report that I wanted to just start with, perhaps, is that you include a technical primer. You've got a kind of a set of definitions and, I think, usefully some distinctions between what's going on with LLMs for content moderation versus more standard machine learning classifiers and recommendation mechanisms and other types of algorithmic models that have been used in content moderation for quite some time now. What do you think the listener needs to know about the technical aspect of this phenomenon of the use of LLMs for content moderation at scale from our vantage right now in June of 2025?
Yeah, I mean, I encourage folks to look at the technical primer. That is, the audience for that are mostly folks who aren't very familiar with either industry jargon or technical terms. Leveling up, I think one thing that is really critical to consider when thinking about LLM-driven content moderation is that you have typically two layers. So one is the foundation model layer or the LLM. So LLM large language models. And that's pretty explicit. It's large language models. So people see it as God or this sci-fi technology. It's really not. It's really big data sets. And I think we often forget that. So if we think about traditional machine learning, the difference is that this is a larger set, right? And so this has implication, obviously, for privacy and other rights that we can explore later down the line. But one, consider they're very, very, very big enormous data sets that require a lot of computing power. And so really, there's only a handful of companies right now building these models. The ones that we looked at in more depth are Llama by Facebook, Meta, ChatGPT, OpenAI, Claude, Anthropic, Gemini, Google. And then right as I was finishing up the report, DeepSeek came out. So there's emerging models as well, but it's still a very small number of foundation models, given how much data and compute they use. And I often say they're really not that technically complicated. They're just bigger, right? And so from a concentration of power, that has a lot of importance. And so then, the platforms that I mentioned, they both develop and often use, they develop the LLMs and they use them for content moderation. But what happens for all the other ones, like Discord or Reddit or Slack, although Slack might be bought by one of them, but anyways, all this, there are so many other platforms. They do not build their own LLMs. They will either have a license with one of the foundation model companies and then fine tune them, or they will use one of the open source like DeepSeek or Llama or something they find on Hugging Face and then fine tune them for their purposes. But what that means, so that's like one thing from a technical thing to understand how LLMs work and how they're used in practice. And then another thing I will flag is that LLMs are a subset of generative AI. That's a term we most commonly know. Generative AI today has, to some extent, become equivalent of ChatGPT. It is much broader than ChatGPT, but LLMs are one subset of that, or foundation models as well. And then maybe one last thing I'll flag is multilingual language models are those that are trained on text data from dozens to sometimes hundreds of languages simultaneously. And so the idea is that they will be more capable of processing and generating inputs and outputs in multiple languages. And we can talk about whether that works or not. There's fantastic research that has been done that inspired me a lot for my work.
I mean, I think what's great about, again, this report is that it does detail at least some of the ambition technically that people have for using large language models and content generation and the possibilities it opens up for sorts of things that have been very hard to do or difficult, certainly at scale with today's mechanisms, including, as you say, a big one, which is servicing many languages that previously social media firms might have decided are simply off limits for their consideration because it's just not perhaps feasible or profitable for them to address certain markets or certain languages with the type of scale that perhaps people in those places might believe is necessary in order to do a good job. So that's been a kind of consistent complaint from civil society for a long time. But there are other things here that you point to that seem to be fit in the category of a promise, such as possibly more robust types of nudges or interventions in what people post or after the fact what they post. I know I've talked to people about the idea that we can imagine content moderation with LLMs starting before you ever post something, kind of pre facto content moderation, possibly an interaction with the content moderation system, as it were, at that point, before you even push something live to your feed. I don't know, what else did you learn in terms of just studying these things technically about the possibilities they open up?
Yeah, thanks for bringing it up. And the report does obviously highlight harms and also explores promises for each individual, right? So I'm with you. One of the key findings of this research was that probably the most promise of LLM-driven content moderation is not to remove content or even to, moderate it through a ranking system or curating content, but really anything on procedural rights. So it's before posting, like you said, nudges, even though I will say that we also don't want this like Big Brother type experience where we're typing something and, oh dear Lord, the algorithm has found that this may be controversial, but there can be nudges, there can be suggestions for formulating something that could be abusive. They're less invasive. They could even like suggest other information. So for example, if someone is posting something clearly wrong about, like factually incorrect about the Ukraine war or elections, right? Like civic integrity stuff, they could be check out xyz.gov, right? Elections.gov or something. And also on the flip side, appeals and remedy, when a user posts content, they can immediately know that this has been flagged for, you know, especially content that it would be automatically removed. They can get an automated notice that's more personalized, that this content has been flagged for review or has been removed, and give more personalized information about how they can appeal that decision. So there's all this kind of like user interaction that I think is pretty cool and exciting. There's also the possibility for user personalized content moderation. So let's say one user really welcomes gore or like sensitive content, borderline content that doesn't violate either the policies or, you know, the platform's policies or the law. They can adapt and adjust their own moderation, as opposed to someone who really doesn't want to see anything remotely sensitive or related to some topics because of any trauma or just dislike or whatever. That can be helpful. And I'll give a shout out here to Discord, with whom we collaborated for a year on engaging external stakeholders as they develop ML-driven interventions to moderate abuse and harassment on their platform, specifically for teens. And so we really worked with a broad range of stakeholders, including youth and children, which is interesting, in understanding how they would like to see AI-driven innovation and intervention. So it wasn't only LM, it was also traditional machine learning. But yeah, so I think to sum up, creative uses of LLM for moderating content, and by moderating, I mean broadly, is something that I support much more than automated removal, which one of the conclusions of this report is that at least today, it is still too risky, potentially harmful, and just doesn't, like, ineffective to do that. There will be too many false positives and too many false negatives, both of those disproportionately falling on already marginalized groups who tend to be, as most folks you probably know, disproportionately silenced by platform and also disproportionately targeted by violative content. So that's like one of the main findings of how we can use LLMs safely is more on the procedural side than actually the content.
Well, we'll see how platforms attempt to go about this. I mean, we're already seeing some in the wild examples of uses of LLMs. There's been reporting even this week of Meta's new community notes program using LLMs in certain ways. So, you know, I think there'll be probably as wide a variety of applications of LLMs as there have been of machine learning in content moderation, and we'll just, I suppose, see how it goes. I mean, different platforms, who knows, maybe one or two will err towards creating a AI nanny state, hyper-sanitized environment that people may recoil from, you know, or regard as overly censorious or what have you. And yet it's possible to imagine, as you say, like lots of different types of interventions that people might regard as useful or helpful and whatever way. But I want to pause on maybe thinking about the benefits and dig a little more into the potential human rights impacts, because that's where, of course, you spend the bulk of this report concerned with things like privacy, freedom of expression and information and opinion, questions around peaceful assembly and association, non-discrimination, participation. Take us through a couple of those things. When you think about the most significant potential human rights impacts of the deployment of large language model systems in content moderation at scale, what do you think is most prominent?
So I'll just highlight some of the most like specific to LLMs. One thing to consider is that LLMs often exacerbate and accelerate already existing harms done by traditional machine learning. And traditional ML accelerates and exacerbates harms committed by humans often, right? So I think it's like, you know, the more scale can be good for accuracy and speed, obviously. And it also has, there's another side to that coin. So some of the things you'll find in the report are kind of an LLMified analysis of automated content moderation, but I will single out a few really new concerns related to LLMs. And so one of them is kind of a, coming back to the concentration of power issue that I mentioned before, any decision that is made at the foundation level, at the foundation model level, unless it is proactively fine-tuned at the deployment level, that I will trickle down across platforms. So to give you an example, if Meta decides that pro-Palestinian content is considered violent or terrorist content, and there has been a lot of reporting to show that, then if another platform uses Llama without changing that specifically, any decision that Meta makes at the level of Llama will then trickle down to the other platforms. So that's something to consider from a freedom of expression angle, is generalized censorship if it's false positives, and at the same time, generalized content that should be removed will not be removed if the foundation model does not consider that as harmful. So that is something, that interaction is particularly important because we've never seen that before, in, to my knowledge at least, and the dynamics on content moderation. Another big thing around freedom of information, for example, is hallucinations. So that is a very stereotypical Gen AI problem. And for folks who don't know, hallucinations are, it's content that is generated by the AI system and that is just made up and wrong. So it, the weird thing is that it does it in a way that seems so confident and so right. And it is just nonsense, right? So it will make up academic papers, or it will make up news articles or any kind of facts. So if platforms use this to moderate mis- and disinformation, that will just be inaccurate to begin with. And it's hard sometimes to parse that when you have a pretty convincing, when you have pretty convincing content. And even if, for example, human moderators would use LLMs or Gen AI to help them moderate content, if they see this really elaborate article about how whatever Trump won the 2020 elections, for example, and they're not familiar with it, that could form the basis of their decisions, and it's just plain wrong. So that's a new harm and risk. Another one that I found was super interesting, and this I will say, was me a lot of this paper was me trying to envision harms and then probe it with engineers or technical folks, and also non-technical as well, to ask them, does this make sense? Could this be true? And for example, from freedom of peaceful and assembly and protest, one thing to consider is that protests are, and contrarian views are per definition anti-majority. You have a minority express themselves, you go against powerful interests like governments or companies, or even just the status quo. And what does that mean? This data is not well represented in the training data sets, because machine learning, I often say, is just steroids on stats. So if a view is is predominant in the data set, even if it's completely wrong, that is the output, right? It doesn't actually, ML, machine learning never gives a real decision. It gives a prediction about what is statistically possible. So when you have protesters or, journalists, investigative journalists, for example, or anybody bringing up new stuff, that will not actually show up in the data set and therefore will not be moderated well. And, let's give platforms and those deploying content moderation system the highest benefit of the doubt. They probably want to moderate it well. It just, the system will not function unless specifically fine-tuned, because protests fall outside the curve of statistical data. And that's also the case for, conflicts or exceptional circumstances, crises, These events are by definition exceptional and therefore fall outside the statistical curve and are not moderated well. And that's another key finding. For freedom of association, two last pieces I'd like to highlight that we found were really interesting. One was on participation. So on one side, LLMs actually have the potential to support more participatory design by enabling customizable moderation. So like I said before, if users have personalized content moderation, or perhaps in the future use AI agents to moderate their own content as they want. On the flip side, in practice, affected communities are largely excluded from shaping content moderation systems. That's not new. That has also happened in machine learning generally. It's mostly, you know, white tech bros in San Francisco or Silicon Valley. So especially marginalized groups and those in the global majority are excluded from that. The addition with LLMs is that they are typically, quote unquote, improved through a method called reinforcement learning from human feedback or red teaming. So you have folks thinking about, in the case of red teaming, what are potential bad, like worst case scenarios, and testing it from an adversarial perspective. Same for reinforcement learning. They go through these models and they, like, quote unquote, fix them. They reteach them how to learn. The problem is that people who do that are usually Stanford graduates, those in Silicon Valley or other elitist institutions, and it's very rare. I personally have never heard of folks from marginalized groups being invited to participate in these kinds of activities. I myself, for example, have been invited, but you have to be in a niche kind of like AI group to do that. And everybody who I've spoken to who has done that, I personally have not, I'll say that it's a very homogenous group. And so there are efforts to reduce inaccuracy and improve the performance of the models, of the LLMs. However, the people who do that are typically very homogenous. And so it's just like a snowball effect. And the last piece on remedy is that while there are potential promises to access remedy better, like I said before, most here on user notification, helping them identify remedy, like appeals mechanisms, speeding up the appeals, there's also fundamentally a lack of explainability and transparency. And that can create barriers to remedy. Another issue, like I said before, is that there are these two layers, the layer of foundation models, so the ChatGPT, the Claude, the Gemini, and then the social media platform that deploys it. And it's hard to know where to appeal, how to appeal. The foundation models themselves don't really know how a decision was made. Social media platforms know that even less. Do you appeal to the platform? Does the platform then appeal again to the third-party LLM? Where does the user fall into this? So just accountability becomes fragmented, and there's a lot of confusion and lack of clarity around how to go around that.
So I want to come to some of your recommendations, because you have both recommendations to LLM developers and deployers, as well as to those who are potentially applying these things inside of social media companies. But your section on recommendations to policymakers is perhaps mercifully brief. You've only got a handful of recommendations there. It's clear, I think, just from the onus in the report on where the recommendations are, that you see it largely as something that private sector needs to sort out. How are they going to deploy these technologies or not? But when it comes to policymakers, what are you telling them? You know, I see you're interested in making sure they're refraining on some level from mandating the use of these things, because I suppose there's a possibility that somebody might come along and say, oh, in fact, we demand that you use them. I was trying to think of a context for that, but then I found myself thinking about some of the laws we've seen put forward in the United States, even, where there have been segments of those laws. I think in some of the must-carry laws, where there have been these ideas around transparency of moderation decisions. And some of the, I feel like I've read amicus briefs where some of the people opposed to those laws would make arguments like, well, it's just simply not possible to give explainable rationale to every single user for every single content moderation decision that's made. Well, presumably LLMs would make that quite possible. And you could imagine a government coming along and saying, somehow in the interest of free expression, we would like to mandate that you use artificial intelligence to explain any content moderation decision that you might take. You say that's a bad idea, along with other things, but what would you tell policymakers to be paying attention to here?
Yeah, I mean, that's a very astute, it's a, you observed that well. Most of the recommendations are to LLMs, developers and deployers. The reason for this is not that we only see the onus on the private sector, not on the public sector, is that for practical reasons, this part of the research was mostly on assessing the human rights impacts, and the recommendations piece was really the last part, and we didn't have that much capacity to go deep. So the second iteration of this report, hopefully we will continue, it will be really to zoom into the recommendations. And I will say then the on the policymaking side, so a lot of our work at ECNL is on policy and legal advocacy. We've been working behind the scenes on the AI Act for the past 5 years. And right now there's conversations around the GPI code in the EU, general purpose AI. And the reason why I didn't go deep here is that one, we don't want a specific AI content moderation or LLM moderation law. We have the DSA in Europe. The US, I'll just set aside because right now, like, there's a lot going on. So we're not calling for a specific LLM content moderation law. And the EU already has the DSA and the AI. And I'd say a lot of the foundational aspects of LLMs to policymakers would be kind of basic AI around like data protection, human rights impact assessments, stakeholder engagement. So I added these big categories. I didn't go really deep into them. It's mostly how can we not fuck it up, to be honest. And I think content moderation, as you know, is a very fraught topic where even folks who are well-intentioned just don't understand it enough. So sometimes you will have these claims of a platform should remove problematic content within an hour. It's like, okay, cool. In theory, that sounds great. What does that mean in practice? It means a lot of false positives. It means that disproportionately marginalized groups will be impacted, including sex workers, racialized groups, queer folks. And you'll have to use automated content moderation, which has all the false positives and false negatives that have been reported on. So the key recommendations we made to policymakers here are very foundational, I'd say. One, you know, do not mandate LLM moderation exactly for the reason that you expressed before. Two, maintain human oversight. So if LLMs are used to moderate content, and especially to remove content, there still should be a legal requirement for platforms to integrate human-in-the-loop systems, meaning that humans will review whatever decision LLM does. Three, kind of broad transparency and accountability metrics and requirements that's very DSA-esque. Digital Services Act. And, you know, a lot of that is really about transparency, like mandating disclosure of how LLM systems function and how they're used. The reality, Justin, we don't know. Like, I had several off-the-record calls with platforms. Off-the-record means I couldn't, you know, publish the names. They also gave me very vague information. There's some information that was published by them, and you'll see it in the report. ChatGPT said they use LLMs for content moderation. Meta says they're beginning to play around with it. Gemini or Google. But overall, we don't know. I definitely don't know when it's used, when I use social media. And we don't know accuracy rates. We don't know how they're used in appeals or how they're enforced. So really requiring platforms to notify users about LLM moderation actions. And again, that's nothing new, I would say. That's just using prior like Santa Clara principles on transparency and accountability or DSA or kind of like mainstream civil society asks and implementing them for LLMs. The two last ones that we highlighted, one is mandating human rights impact assessments. So, hey, platforms, good news. I did one here. So you can use my, you know, my goal is that this will be a starting point for platforms to have like basically an HRA handed to them on a silver platter. And then obviously, you know, use this as a starting point for to look at how they implement LLMs on their platform, because it'll be specific to each platform. But on that note, one thing that policymakers could do is make HRAs mandatory for LLM developers and platforms that deploy them, both before deployment and throughout the LLM lifecycle. So, for example, the pilot with Discord was at the ideation phase, so design, product design. Before they even developed the product, they consulted with a lot of folks to see how an LLM or machine learning driven system could be helpful. Is it nudges? Is it for removing content? Do we not want that? Why? And then continue that throughout all the way through development and deployment. Yeah, and make it accessible for external stakeholders. There's so much expertise in the room. And I often say to platforms that, you know, trust and safety teams, policy teams, human rights teams tend to be underfunded. Just go to civil society that has such extensive knowledge, or journalists like yourself and academics, and like just drink their wisdom, because there's a lot of stuff out there.
This report seems like a good jumping off point for a lot of folks who might be interested in investigating or collecting artifacts of how the platforms are deploying these things, or generally kind of trying to pay attention to these issues and trying to discern whether the introduction of LLMs in this context is on balance a good thing, a bad thing, or perhaps somehow neutral or indiscernible with regard to the overall information integrity environment. What would you encourage people to do next? What would you encourage them to go and look at? What threads would you like to see the field pull from here?
Yeah, one core piece that we didn't talk about much is the multilingual piece of it. So how this can work in different languages. And I'll just give a shout out here to really cool efforts in the global majority to develop community-driven, local, smaller LLMs or data sets. So there's like a Masakane in Sub-Saharan Africa. There's really cool community-driven initiatives that kind of go beyond the Silicon Valley profit-first, massive, like monopolization and dynamics. So that is one thing. And I really encourage not only researchers, but also platforms to talk to them. Like a lot of the platforms that I spoke with, they didn't even know these existed. And, you know, if I say that this report is an HRA handed on a silver platter, they have really cool data sets that would be really helpful, especially to smaller platforms. And they could just plug these into their own models. So that's one thing that I hope research and industry will move towards, is more languages, more dialects, understanding that it's not only a difference between English and other language. It really is a colonial, like imperialist dynamic where it's, you know, English or like French or German or Spanish will be much better moderated, and languages that are close to these ones are better. And then, you know, obscure, poorly researched languages like work very, very poorly. And that's, you can read in the report, the reasons are both because the data sets do not exist, or they're just bad quality because there's not enough investment. So, you know, I really would encourage platforms to invest more resources into that, more participation, and proactively include stakeholders. The other area I would love to see is, yeah, just like open conversations between platforms and civil society. And like I said, this is a nerdy topic, like LLMs and content moderation. It's it doesn't roll off the tongue. So if folks with expertise in content moderation would like, you know, hopefully this report can give them more context. And then I would love to see, you know, more evidence, new ideas. Like I actually, like I said, some of these things were like my own kind of how could this work? But through many conversations with folks, and I really would want to see more thinking, more assessment of impacts and more evidence as well. Like this paper, it's long, 70 pages. I didn't mean to make it this long, but there's a lot of stuff. And I'd say the last part is computer science papers move so fast, incredibly fast. It's hard to keep up. And they're very theoretical. So to the extent that there can be more collaboration between technical folks who come from, you know, the machine learning, AI, or computer science field, and policy and human rights, I think we'll actually be able to build much better products and push policymakers to regulate this stuff better.
Appreciate you taking the time to speak to me about this. And I would encourage my readers to go and check out this full report, which is available on the ecnl.org website. I will include a link to it in the show notes. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Justin.
That's it for this episode. I hope you'll send your feedback. You can write to me at justin@techpolicy.press. Thanks to my guest, thanks to my co-founder, Brian Jones, and thank you for listening.
Tech Policy Press.